Hello, this is Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is regarded as one of Portugal's finest authors to have emerged in recent years. He's written more than 30 books, plays, picture books, young adult novellas, essays and novels, including Kokoschka's Doll, which won the European Union Prize for Literature. Jesus Christ Drank Beer was considered the best Portuguese novel of the year by Time Out Lisbon, and Where Do Umbrellas End Up won the 2014 Portuguese Society for Authors Award. He's also a columnist, an illustrator, an animated film director, and a member of the band The Soaked Lamb. Afonso Cruz, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you. Hello.
That is quite some CV there, covering so many different art forms. How would you describe yourself?
I don't know. I always work with illustration and drawing and painting and with images mostly. That's why I work so many years as an animation movie director. But I also been a reader all my life, and so the reading became like a second nature, and one day it just popped out and became something else, like writing. And I don't know, but it was just a natural path. I didn't choose any of those things. I just, I don't know.
I wonder then how much your background in animated filmmaking influences the way that you write. Do you use the same technique?
Actually, I do. And the first time I was giving workshops on writing, I realized that method I was using, it was a common thing in literary context, but I thought it came from animation. For instance, in animation, you usually, this is a rule, of course, you can change it. But usually, if you want to move your hand from left to right, for instance, you start with the first drawing, then usually people think that then you must draw the hand close to the first one, and then a third one, and then the fourth, and so on. But what we actually do is drawing the first hand and the last hand. And when you have these two extremes, then you will draw something in between, which are the in between drawings, and you always work like that with in-betweens. And I also write a little bit like that. I mean, when I have a character that desires anything, something, that is the end, that is the extreme. He's there, he likes something, he wants something, that's the end point of the action. And then you have to fill in the in-betweens. And so it's an animator's technique that you can use in literature, for instance.
You've been incredibly prolific in literature. Your first novel, that was The Flesh of God in 2008, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, not the first thing I wrote, but the first thing I published.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about that book.
Actually, that book is out of print, and I at least for now, I don't have intention of
Is that because, because some writers tell me that when they look back at their first work, they feel that actually it shouldn't have come out and that it was just a learning process, and they're quite happy for that work to be forgotten.
I'm not ashamed. It's not me anymore. I'm not really ashamed of that book. It's just a different thing. I wouldn't write that book now.
How interesting! What about
more like
the next one, the Encyclopedia of World Story?
Yes, that was the first thing I wrote. Now it has 7 volumes. And it's a fake encyclopedia. It's a fiction work, not an historical work. Although the first volume was sold in all Portuguese bookshops as a historical book, but it wasn't. And was the first thing I wrote, and I tried to publish it, and the publishing house was a little bit scared about the format of that book, which was they were right because as I told previously, the book was sold as a historical book, and so that they asked me to write something more conventional, more normal. And that's why I wrote that first book, the Flesh of God, which is a kind of, it's hard to explain, but it's a satirical psychedelic thriller. I don't know.
Sounds extraordinary. But I mean, your Encyclopedia of the World story went on to win a prize, as did your next book, The Books Which Devoured My Father.
The books that devoured my father, it was a juvenile novella. It's translated to English. I think it's actually the book that I sell the most. So it's a book about books. It's a story of a young boy that lost his father, never met his father, actually. His father died before he was born. And when he is 12, her grandmother gives him a key to his father's library, and she tells him that his father didn't actually die. He was caught by books, was devoured by books. He was so immersed in his readings that he was living inside books. So the thing about that book is that his son is going to read his father's books in order to find them there.
Oh, that's amazing. I sometimes feel like that. Is that where it comes from? Do you feel you're being eaten alive by books sometimes?
Yes, you forget everything around you. And yes. Yes, you eat them and they eat us.
Yes, so absolutely.
It's reciprocal.
The Human Contradiction also won an award. I mean, in fact, I don't think you've written anything that hasn't been awarded something.
Yes, Human Contradiction, I wrote it and illustrated exactly at the same time. And the presentation of that book was at the same day as Kokoschka's Doll. And the journalists, they knew that I was publishing a novel for adults and a book for children. And everybody thought that the Human Contradiction was for adults and Kokoschka's Doll for children because of their titles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's hilarious. I mean, Kokoschka's Doll is actually what we're here to talk about because it's just been published in English by Maclehose Press. You got the European Union Prize for Literature in 2012 for that book. I mean, a really massive book and now finally available for us to read in English. It's beautiful. It's lyrical. It's whimsical. And, well, explain the title to us. I think maybe the way to start is to tell us a little bit about Kokoschka and this extraordinary act that he commissioned.
Yes. Well, the thing is that people think that it's the book is about that episode, which is not that Kokoschka's Doll. It's just a metaphor for the old book. Actually, when it was published in Portugal, I remember that a journalist called me and told me that I'm reading the book. I'm on page 160 and there's no doll at all.
Yeah, but I'm interested for our listeners to know that story because it informs, as you say, the title and really the metaphor for what's going on.
Well, Kokoschka was an Austrian painter, very well known. And there was this woman, Alma Mahler. Everybody was in love with Alma back then. Klimt, Gropius, Gustav Mahler, of course, they were married. And also Kokoschka. And they have an intense relationship. But their characters, they wouldn't go well together. Mm-hmm. And they broke up and Kokoschka couldn't cope with that and wasn't eating and his mother couldn't stand him anymore, complaining about his life, and so he decided to create a doll or ask someone to make a doll exactly as Alma, as Alma Mahler was. So he wrote a letter to the toy maker, and it's a very beautiful letter because it doesn't talk about love, but it's a very, very beautiful love letter because of that, because it's very technical. and only someone madly in love could remember all the details that he writes there, like the wrinkles she would make when she was laughing or something like that. And I always find that story very beautiful. And then he lived with a doll almost a year, and he used to import perfumes for the doll from France, Paris. He used to walk with her, and they would go to the opera together, and well, they have a regular married couple life. And also Kokoschka, something he denied later, but it said that he forced the her maids to create gossips about the doll when they were shopping, and they should talk about the doll as all the other maids would do in the market. So it was something really, really, really crazy. And after a year, he was drunk and was really tired of the situation, and he broke a bottleneck against the doll, and that was it.
Decapitated and covered in red wine. And it's an extraordinary story. But as you say, really plays almost no part in the novel, but it does have an impact on the characters. Now tell us about your characters, because they are extraordinary. The bird shop owner.
It's a man that is not very clever. He's unaware of the context he's living. He's actually a German living in Dresden, which is a particular place in the Second World War.
Yeah, the bombing of Dresden in 1945.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And for me, it's kind of a symbol of the German people back then, sometimes unaware or ignorant of, or just having something very mechanic or acting mechanic without thinking exactly what was going on with all the context, all the Nazi context. So it's like the people, all people. And the thing is that the beginning of the novel is a kind of Kokoschka's doll also, because since he's not very, very clever, it's like is also a puppet, doesn't have a conscience. And what happens is that a young Jewish boy hides himself in the cave of his bird shop. And
in the basement, so he's under the floorboards.
In the basement, yes. And becomes his conscience, something like this. So it's like a puppet and the puppeteer, this young boy.
It is an extraordinary story, and it goes to so many different places. You have this woman who has who's marked with the stigmata. Thomas Mann is there too. There's an author who steals his unpublished manuscript. I'm really, really interested in this other idea that you put forward, trying to find a method to weigh the human soul, measuring evil and sin with this hydraulic scale.
Yes, that's a millionaire that has to do with those families I talked about in Kokoschka's doll. That family is originary from Hungary. They are characters also of the encyclopedia, and that millionaire Varga has lots of museums and foundations and things all around Europe. Or it's supposed to have those things, and he was really obsessed by the weight of butterflies and the weight of the soul, and which I understand it was something that it wasn't uncommon for that time. Lots of people were thinking like him, and trying to understand the differences between which we still do in philosophy of mind, and so understand the differences between a physical thing or a material thing and a psychological thing or a spiritual thing. And this Varga is just an example of a kind of pseudoscience about these topics.
It's an extraordinary book, and I'm so pleased that it's finally available in English. But it's not your most recent book. It came out in 2012, I think, in Portuguese. Your next book, Jesus Christ Drank Beer, was considered the best Portuguese novel of the year by Time Out in Lisbon and the best novel of 2012 by the readers of Publico. Tell us a little bit about that intriguing title.
Jesus Christ Drank Beer, it's actually a story about a young girl that has a very old grandmother that has a last wish. Her grandmother wants to visit the Holy Land before she dies, but she's very old, they are very poor, so it's an impossible wish to accomplish. And what this girl and with the help of a teacher, They will disguise one village, one nearby village will be disguised as Jerusalem, and they take her grandmother there and say that this is Jerusalem. And the story is all about this. Jesus Christ Drank Beer, it's because it has to do with beer and sacrifice and what we can do for others. And it's actually a book about sacrifice.
And Where Do Umbrellas End Up, which won the Portuguese Society for Authors Award? Tell us about that.
Well, that's usually it's the readers. It's the book the readers like the most. It's a huge novel with 700 pages, and it's based on a real life episode that happened with Gandhi when a Hindu approached him with his son in his arms, and his son was dead, and he asked Gandhi, "A Muslim killed my son, what should I do?" And Gandhi answers that what you have to do now is adopt a Muslim child. And I use this and recontextualize it it's a book that is based in Pakistan. And there is a Muslim family, and there is a man that has a son, and the son is killed by mistake by American soldiers. And the same thing happens. He can't cope with his son's death, and there is a Hindu that approaches him with Gandhi's solution, which is not a real solution, but the Gandhi answer. And he said that what you have to do now is adopt an American child. And that's what the man will try to do. He will try to adopt an American child.
So again, you've got that theme of sacrifice really coming through, haven't you?
Yes, although here it's a little bit different because it's not about the sacrifice. It's about the way you deal with death and with loss. And how can you cope with it after some time? In Jesus Christ Drank Beer, it's another thing. It's a little bit more like, what can I do for instance, I can transform a small village into a holy city if I want, just because I love someone. Mm-hmm. I love someone, so I'm able to transform that simple village into something very, very special, which is something we do when we love. If it's a regular person, someone that you don't have any connection to, it's just some person. But when you love them, it's like make them sacred in a way, which literally means putting apart or separating. So when you take that person from all the other and you put it aside in a special place. That's what love does. And so Jesus Christ, it's about that also, mm-hmm. because Jesus was a man and this double nature of man and God. So a man that can become God, or a village that can become a holy town, or a simple person that can become divine because we love him. Or about beer, because also you can transform the grain into something special.
Your next couple of award winners, Flowers from 2015 and then in 2016, the rate of your work is extraordinary. 2016 was Not All Whales Fly. And then we come to possibly your most ambitious outing. It's a non-fiction book. How do you pronounce it? Jalan? Jalan?
I think it's Jalan Jalan. It's an Indonesian word for it means walking as a leisure thing. Not walking to some goal or some, so it's like a promenade, mm-hmm. Something like that. Usually they use those repetitions to form plurals in Indonesian. So if you have, for instance, table and you want to say tables, you say table, table. And jalan means street or the act of walking. But when you repeat it, it's something more, it's not a plural, unless you're talking about streets, but the act of walking becomes some act of art or entertainment because you don't have a goal. You're walking for the sake of walking. And when you repeat jalan, it means something like that. It's like art or like love or friendship. You don't do that to earn money, for instance. You do that for the sake of art or for the sake of love or whatever. And I found that very beautiful as a description of what it means to travel for me. So that book, it's a non-fiction book about everything, about literature, about science and philosophy, but always from a traveling perspective.
Because you are hugely traveled, aren't you? I mean, you've been to, more than 60 countries or something?
80 nowadays, yes. Yes, I travel a lot. And now mostly because of my work, but during more than a decade, I was traveling for pleasure.
How are you dealing with it now when we can't go anywhere?
I also like to be isolated in at home. I like both worlds. I live in a very isolated place in Portugal called Alentejo, and I don't have neighbors. My nearest neighbor lives more than 1 kilometer from here, and is a shepherd. And I like it here a lot. I really like this solitude and being with my books. Surrounded by books and working in my novels, so it's okay. In that way, I'm not really affected. This pandemic is affecting everybody in different ways, but I'm very lucky.
In 2018, you pulled off the same stunt you'd done in 2012 by publishing simultaneously a book for children, How to Cook a Child, and also, I think, which is your latest novel, The Karenina Principle. Were you channeling Tolstoy there?
A little bit. It doesn't have anything to do with Anna Karenina. It's just the first sentence. It's actually a pun. Because I use it as, in Portuguese, princípio, principle means the beginning and also means a law, principle. So I use the title in both ways, because it's the beginning of Anna Karenina and the law of the beginning of Anna Karenina, because it's a law, actually, that sentence. It's used in biology and history, and it's actually a derivation of an entropy law. It's a probabilistic law that says that every family, every
happy families are
happy
all alike.
Family look like yes.
Every and unhappy all family them, is unhappy in its own way.
Yes, exactly. and the thing is that it's easier. It's much easier to do the wrong thing than the right thing. You have a heart in one place, it couldn't be anywhere else, or you wouldn't work. and if you think about your house, you may have your pens in a cup, for instance. And if you take that pen from that place, it won't be in the right place. So you have infinite wrong places for things to be, and only one place for the things to be. In the right place. So that's the perfection. And for imperfection, you have infinite places, infinite forms, infinite. It's also diversity. It's beautiful because that unhappiness that Tolstoy talks about, it's not really unhappiness. I don't think it applies to happiness. It applies to perfection and imperfection. And imperfection, that's what gives you all the diversity you have around you. And it's really important to have that diversity, even for your own happiness. You have to deal with that. So, and it's a book about that, someone that falls in love by someone that hates the foreigner and falls in love with the foreigner.
We have not spoken at all yet about your music. I'm aware we're running out of time, but I just wanted to play a little blast of one of your songs. Afonso, what is that we've just listened to?
It's a cover. Original was a samba that we make some arrangement and change the song a little bit and made this cover, which it's a very beautiful samba, Brazilian kind of music, very related to carnival. And I was especially fascinated by the lyrics. It starts with saying something like, take your smile from my way because I want to get through with my sorrow. Uh-huh. Something like this.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful way to start a song.
Tell me about the band, The Soaked Lamb.
Well, the band started almost 1 year, I believe, one year before I started writing or publishing. And we recorded a first album in an apartment when I was living in Lisbon, and our intention was not to play live, just to record that album, and that was it. But by the end of it, we thought that it was good enough to play around it.
And is as successful as your literary, your animation and your illustration career.
No, because we don't dedicate as much time as we should if we were a full-time musicians. Mm. So what happens is that we are now recording our fourth album, and we started doing this 4 years ago, so it's...
You're just insanely prolific. It's extraordinary. And I mean, the other thing I have to point out before we go is that not only have you written Kokoschka's Doll, but you've done the illustration for the cover too.
Yes, and some illustrations in the inside, the which is not very usual because novels for adults usually don't have illustrations. And there are some prejudice about this because usually... adults tend to believe that when there are illustrations, that's not for them, it's for children, which is really, really strange, but it actually happens. I have a book called The Painter Under the Sink, which has lots of illustrations. It's a novel for adults, but in bookshops, I found it lots of times in children's section because of the illustrations, and adults tend to think as if an illustration is in a book, it's for children. If it's on a wall, it's art. It's another thing. But in a book, usually it's for children.
And of course, the confusion of the title. So just to be clear to anybody who's listening, Kokoschka's Doll is not about a doll. It has illustrations in it. It is not a book for children.
It's not for children.
It's won the European Prize for Literature. It's an excellent book. And now it's finally been translated from the Portuguese by Raul Berry. It's published by Maclehose Press, and it is by the multi-talented Afonso Cruz. Thank you so much for speaking to me,
Afonso.
Thank you. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer Court. And you can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.